Welcome to the WWE Podcast, the most passionate and authentic wrestling analysis on the web. We've got you covered with every Raw, SmackDown, and NXT show, giving you a no bullshit opinion. We know you love wrestling. We do too. So let's get this show underway.
And that's the bottom line. What? Cause Stone Cold said so.
Hey guys, what's going on? And welcome back to Rivalries on the WWE Podcast on this Friday, November 27th, as Survivor Series is now in the rearview mirror and we are quickly approaching Royal Rumble season, as it's crazy to think we are almost 1 year removed from Drew McIntyre's amazing win last year, Edge's return, and obviously we have a pit stop along the way at TLC, but as I so often do, I'm looking right past TLC and looking straight forward to the Royal Rumble event. But before we get into a bit of my thoughts on the current product, I just want to announce that today a very special episode. Well, you know what? I say that all the time, don't I? But I truly do believe that when I first think of these rivalries to do and I get so excited to do them, that they're a very special episode. But so for this week, I am going to be covering the Matt Hardy versus Edge rivalry in mid-2005. And if you guys never watched that and some of the programs and the real life events bleeding up to that program in the late summer of 2005, you are in for a treat. And we'll get into that very shortly. But as I always do, just want to touch a bit on my thoughts on the current product. And I'll just give a quick thoughts on my Survivor Series. And Survivor Series for me was a pretty good pay-per-view, and it overachieved in a lot of respects. And why I say that is because in a lot of ways I found the build was quite poor from WWE, but when the pay-per-view came and went, I realized that I cared a lot for the matches that I didn't think I would. And I'll start right at the top. Roman Reigns versus Drew McIntyre. Look, I really thought that I would not care about this match strictly because of how much I disliked the build to it. But after the match started and it finished, I had to say, like, what a performance these guys put on. And the storytelling was really well done. And considering that they only really started building this match 9 days out from it, and they put the belt back on Drew McIntyre just 6 days before it, I gotta say, WWE knocked it out of the park. And I will walk back a bit of my comments from last week when I said that they really messed up from a long-term perspective by putting the belt back on Drew and sacrificing a potential main event match between these guys. Because a couple of reasons told me that I think this program may be far from done between these two. Number one, the commentators reference a couple of times that Drew McIntyre has never beaten Roman Reigns in a one-on-one match. And I like that they reference that because I feel like a lot of people were overlooking the fact that these two squared off at WrestleMania 35 just under 2 years ago. And that we were led to believe that this was like the first colossal encounter between these two. But I like the fact that they were referenced the past history between the two competitors. And now that they were playing to the fact that Drew, albeit his mega run over the last 9 months or so, has never beaten Roman Reigns and in many respects is still playing second fiddle to Roman Reigns, as they are both the world champions on their respective shows. And second thing is, the way Roman Reigns won in the very heelish type fashion, by Jey Uso coming in to interfere and Roman Reigns hitting the low blow and then choking him out with the guillotine. And I gotta say, I love that Roman Reigns is using the guillotine as a submission finisher. It leads me to believe that we could still very see these two go toe-to-toe at this year's WrestleMania. How they get there, though, will be very, very interesting. Because for that to happen, one of them would have to lose the belt and pretty much win the Royal Rumble to cross over to the opposite brand. And I thought originally when the show was done that we would see maybe Sheamus or Randy Orton take the belt off of Drew McIntyre between now and the Royal Rumble. But after the events on Monday Night Raw, and we saw Keith Lee, Matt Riddle, and AJ Styles qualify for the number one contenders match next week on Raw, I'm not really sure if they're going to take the strap off of Drew. Because, look, Keith Lee and Matt Riddle, they're really growing on me. Well, Keith Lee, I've liked from the beginning. I was really down on Matt Riddle when he first came out on SmackDown, 6 months ago? But since then, he's really started to grow on me. I don't know why, in some weird way, I find him kind of funny. Originally, I thought he was tailor-made to be a heel, but now he's kind of growing on me in a babyface type way, even though his gimmick is pretty much just being a pothead. But I don't, even though I like Keith Lee and Matt Riddle, I really don't see either of them getting a shot this soon at the WWE Championship. And maybe I'm wrong. And maybe they get a match and at TLC against Drew McIntyre, but neither of them are going to win the championship at this juncture, especially Matt Riddle. Then you get to AJ Styles. And I've said a few times that I would love to see AJ Styles versus Drew McIntyre, specifically at the Royal Rumble, or WrestleMania, actually. And while I really love AJ Styles, and in a lot of ways he's my favorite WWE superstar right now, and I think they're slowly but surely transitioning him over to a babyface as he's really played on the comedy that he has. And on a side note, AJ Styles is one of the most naturally funny guys, I think. And not in a way that he directly tries to be funny, but just his mannerisms, the way he acts. I found that he was just great in the entire build to the 5-on-5 elimination match at Survivor Series. I just don't know if now is the time for AJ Styles to A, go against Drew, and B, potentially take the belt off of Drew after kind of wasting away in obscurity for the better part of 6 months. And I know he had the run as Intercontinental Champion on SmackDown and the brief program with Jeff Hardy and Daniel Bryan, but I really don't think that AJ Styles has been doing enough relevant programs and matches for him to be jolted back into the main event picture, which he has been accustomed to many times in the past. And that's not to say that he can't get back there. Like I've said before, I would love to see him potentially win the Royal Rumble, cement himself as one of the best wrestlers of this generation. I fully believe that he has another main event push, potentially with a championship left in the tank before he rides off into the sunset, which I would assume is coming in the next 5 years or so. But I just don't know if, you know, going right into it at TLC against Drew right now, I don't think he's built enough steam in recent months to warrant him going into the main event picture just yet. I think between now and the Royal Rumble would be a good time to build AJ Styles back up as a legit main event guy, then potentially between Rumble and Mania get back into that contending status. But to come full circle on this mini, I guess it's not a rant because it's all positive. I really like what they're doing on Monday Night Raw right now. But if none of these three guys are legit threats to take the belt off Drew at TLC, then how would we get to Drew versus Roman at WrestleMania? And hey, maybe they don't do that. Maybe that's not the plan at all. Maybe they're going to push forward with Drew against AJ Styles or Keith Lee for WrestleMania, and they're going to do Roman versus The Rock or someone like that over on SmackDown, and we won't see these guys cross paths again. But I like that WWE left the seed for someone like me and many of you out there to potentially think of if they're going to circle back on this for WrestleMania or even beyond this year's WrestleMania. I don't think in one way or another we are done with Drew versus Roman Reigns. The question is not if, but rather when we will see them back in the ring together. And I tip my hat to WWE that although I still don't like that they only built this match with 1 week, but I tip my hat that they were able to make it relevant with just a great in-ring performance by both of these guys. And I say this a lot, but I'll say it again. Drew McIntyre is the best babyface world champion WWE has had since the heyday of John Cena, probably back in 2013, 2014. And I think that they've really struck gold with this guy. They built him perfectly from the time he re-debuted following WrestleMania 34 alongside Dolph Ziggler, slowly turning him babyface in early 2020. everything they've done with Drew McIntyre has been perfect. And you know what? The same goes for Roman Reigns, but as a heel. Roman Reigns right now is killing it in every capacity. And I gotta say, WWE, with these two guys holding the world titles on their respective brands, is in a really good spot. The only question now is, who will be challenging these guys moving forward towards the Rumble and more so WrestleMania? The 5-on-5 match, I gotta say, I loved the booking because it made sense. I came on here last week and I said, I wasn't crazy about how WWE went about booking and building the Raw team to this match, but at least they took the time to tell a story. They built the story between Riddle, Sheamus, AJ Styles, Keith Lee, and Braun Strowman for about 4 weeks. We knew by early November which five guys were on this team, and WWE took the time to tell a story, even if it was a bit childish and juvenile at times, like the whole captain, name-calling, you know, are we going to get along thing. But at least WWE had them in the ring at the same time for multiple weeks, building chemistry of some sort, telling a story that at very least all five of these guys wanted to win a match and wanted to prove that Raw was the better brand. And hey, I said a few times that I wasn't a fan that 80% of the team had just come over from SmackDown. But again, at least they told the story as to why these guys cared. And then on the other side, on SmackDown, you had five guys who, for one, we didn't even know who the fifth guy was until 2 days before the pay-per-view. And they chose arguably the worst option they could have in Otis. And I just got to say, what they've done with Otis between from when he started with Heavy Machinery to now is just an absolute travesty. They've destroyed his character. I would not be surprised if we don't see Otis on television anymore by WrestleMania or at the very latest next summer. I think everyone's done with this guy. It's too bad they had something with Heavy Machinery, but now he's just a joke. He's probably just a glorified jobber. I don't know how we're supposed to take him seriously as a singles competitor against, not to quote WWE, but against the best of the best. So you had Otis as the fifth guy, Seth Rollins, who probably was the funniest part of the pay-per-view, sacrificing himself, but he hasn't acknowledged once that he's been on Team SmackDown, been in totally involved with the whole Murphy and Mysterio family garbage angle. You had Kevin Owens, who hadn't been seen on TV in several weeks. You had Jey Uso, who, again, I like what Jey Uso has done over the past 2 months or so, but at the same time, it's like, well, for one thing, could he do anything besides a super kick? Is he capable of that? Like, is Jey Uso capable of doing anything besides a super kick and the occasional underhand slap to the guy's chin? That's all he does. Oh, and then the splash, I forgot. Like, I'm sorry, like, I like the Usos because it kind of goes for both of them, but then again, I haven't seen Jimmy compete in close to a year at this point, so I can only really talk about Jay from a recent perspective. But, like, my God, like, all he does is super kick. That's all this guy does. Even when he interfered in the Drew and Roman match, he just came in and super kicked Drew. Like, that's all this guy does, and it just devalues the move, and I know that we're a long way from when Shawn Michaels used to win championship matches at WrestleMania with a super kick, aka the Sweet Chin Music, but could we at least not use it as just a transition common move? And if it is going to be a transition move, limit it to maybe 3 or 4 times a match. Like, Kevin Owens uses it, Rusev used to use it. I understand that it's no longer like a deadly finisher, but if it is going to be a transition move, don't use it 5 times in 30 seconds. Like, in the 5-on-5 match, when he was the only guy left on Team SmackDown, I think he did it 12 times. I'm not even joking you, in a 5-minute span. Like, forget the fact that I think that they just use the move too lightly, but it's just like, it's the same thing if someone just keeps doing, I don't know, a suplex. Like, okay, yeah, we used to see Brock do it, the suplex city, but like, he does things more than that, and that was kind of his gimmick. So unless like Jey Uso is going to make his gimmick like super kick city, like, then get on with it. Anyway, I'm not going to go too far into a rant there. And then you had Baron Corbin, who Baron Corbin, well, you want to talk about irrelevant in the past couple months. If you look it up in the dictionary, you'll see King Corbin. So you had a bunch of random guys thrown together on SmackDown who none of them had even really acknowledged that they were part of Team SmackDown. I don't think any of them had been in the ring together at one time in the building weeks. So you know what? It made sense that they got swept clean by Monday Night Raw. Because even though the storyline was sometimes juvenile, at least they were talking about it. At least the five guys on Raw were consistently talking about their upcoming match against SmackDown at Survivor Series. The SmackDown guys, it was as if it wasn't even a thing on SmackDown. That match was not even happening. So normally, I don't like when it's a clean sweep like that at Survivor Series. I like to see those 10-man elimination matches be somewhat competitive. But given the fact that WWE put no time into building to the match from the SmackDown perspective, it made total sense that Raw completely whooped them, and I really enjoyed it because at least it made sense. And at the end of the day, the product is best when it makes sense in some capacity. And given the build from both sides, it made sense that Raw destroyed them. Asuka versus Sasha Banks, another thing. Another time where they put no effort into building to this match, but the in-ring performance superseded it, and superseded the expectations, rather. And I just have to say, what a great job they are doing right now building Sasha Banks as a legit main event competitor. Look, I'm not really a big fan of the Sasha Banks character, but that's just a subjective standpoint. That doesn't change the fact that from an objective perspective, they are doing a masterful job building Sasha Banks, taking the belt away from Bayley, and now she beats Asuka. And I mean, Asuka's kind of wasting away in obscurity in her own right, but Asuka's already a made top competitor. She's already a bona fide main event star. While Sasha Banks has been there in the past, more so back in 2016 when she was having that rivalry with Charlotte, now we're really starting to see WWE put the rocket strap to her and catapult her as a legitimate stable in the top staple, rather, in the at the top of the card. And you know, maybe it's just out of necessity because Becky Lynch isn't there and Charlotte's on the shelf that they have to invest this time into making Sasha Banks a top performer. But no matter what the motive is behind it, they're doing a very good job. Sami Zayn versus Bobby Lashley. Again, the build wasn't great to this. It was pretty much what I thought it was going to be. Sami Zayn trying to run away the whole time. I would have preferred that they took some time into, you know, maybe not make it completely a comedic match, because that's pretty much what it was. You know, the IC champ and the US title should have more of a prestigious match or more of a serious match. But, I mean, it is what it is. There wasn't much they could do from this perspective. You know, Sami Zayn, unless it's a title match, he always seems to lose and slither away in some capacity. So for what it was, it made me laugh. Sami Zayn is hilarious. I think they should make him speak French way more, do so much for his character to get over as a heel, and an annoying heel at that. But the right guy won in Bobby Lashley. Then you get over to the tag team match, and look, these guys tore the house down. The right team won. I would like to see the New Day lose the titles more so sooner rather than later. But from an in-ring perspective, the Street Profits beat the New Day and the right team won. They did their predictable hug and handshake after the match as two babyface teams. And then last but not least, we have the 5-on-5 match on the women's side. And you know, I found this match incredibly sloppy. There were a lot of botches, in my opinion. I didn't find the in-ring competition all that great. But the way it ended was pretty predictable, as Lana doing nothing but being the sole survivor and getting the win for her team just by default. Obviously, the standout performer here is Bianca Belair, budding superstar if I've ever seen one. Spoiler alert, she's my extremely early pick to win the Women's Royal Rumble at this juncture. I don't see anyone else who could possibly, you know, would possibly be a better pick than Bianca Belair. Her versus Sasha Banks at WrestleMania just seems like it would be a match made in heaven. And another thing, I still think that they're missing the boat with Lacey Evans. Her character is as stale as any in WWE, but from an in-ring perspective, they have something very special with Lacey Evans. It's just on them to maybe do something with it and capitalize on this opportunity, because you don't want to waste a talent like Lacey Evans in the ring. But Bianca Belair, I fully expect her to win the Women's Royal Rumble and go up against Sasha Banks at WrestleMania in just a couple months. So enough about that, and let's get into the reason you guys are here, and that is for rivalries. And this week, as previously mentioned, it is going to be Matt Hardy versus Edge in one of the most personal rivalries from a real life and storyline perspective WWE has ever booked. So to go back to 2004, because that's kind of like when this started, is Matt Hardy left the company in late summer of 04 following a program with Kane. And this was a completely kayfabe angle where Kane got Lita pregnant, and then him and Matt Hardy had a match at SummerSlam, I believe, and the winner would get the right to marry Lita. And Kane won the match, married Lita the following night on Raw, and beat the hell out of Matt Hardy, chokeslammed him through the ring, I believe, or off the stage. And after that, we did not see Matt Hardy for quite a while. And in the storyline, Kane married Lita. And then in real life, Matt Hardy got released, and we didn't see him for a better part of a year. But on television, this was just about the time when Edge was really starting to pick up steam. When Matt Hardy first left, he was on a babyface run as the Intercontinental Champion. Then he slowly but surely turned into a heel, and this is when WWE really started to put the rocket strap to Edge. And then he had his short program in early 2005 against Shawn Michaels, went on to win the first ever Money in the Bank ladder match at WrestleMania 21, and become the first ever Money in the Bank contract holder. And then following the Money in the Bank contract win is when they kind of started to tie real life events into the storyline. Because at this point in real life, Edge had, for lack of better terms, stolen Lita from Matt Hardy. And while Matt Hardy was sitting at home and Lita was on the road traveling, she, I guess, had an affair of sorts with Edge, real life name Adam Copeland. And they put Lita beside Edge, and they put them as a pairing on screen, much like they were in real life, because slowly but surely the fans, and this is right in the age, you know, mid-2000s, when the internet really started becoming a prominent thing, when fans started going online and finding out real life leaks and comments and reports, and, you know, they started chanting, I'll say, vulgarities at Lita when she was still a babyface on WWE television. And how they originally did the heel turn of Lita is that while on TV she was still married to Kane, Kane and Edge had a match at, I believe it was Backlash or a pay-per-view just after WrestleMania, or it could have been on a Monday Night Raw, I don't recall correctly what it was, but Lita turned on Kane in the match and aligned herself with Edge and then made out on the top of the ramp. And then Edge and Lita got married the next week on Raw, and he had a short program with Kane, Edge that being, over fighting over Lita. But that was completely kayfabe. That was strictly storyline. There was no real, life part of Kane and Lita being together. In real life, she had been with Matt Hardy, and she had left Matt Hardy for Edge, and the fans knew that. You know, they were chanting things referencing Matt Hardy, and like I said, many vulgarities toward Lita's way. All this while they were building Edge as a main event heel on Monday Night Raw. But again, Matt Hardy was not part of the company. We hadn't seen him since the summer prior, and so we didn't really think that we would see Matt Hardy back on television. And eventually, after a few months or so of the fans relentlessly harassing Lita, at least from my perspective, I thought that it would eventually die out. But then eventually we saw something happen on a Monday Night Raw that I never expected to see. And while Edge was getting ready to go to the ring for a match, someone attacked him right before they went to commercial. And it looked like Matt Hardy, but we didn't know if it was him because we saw him from the back, then from the side. And it was one of those cutscenes where, like, you see the guy coming, walking backstage, and, you know, Jim Ross was just like, and following, and after the break, we will see Edge against so-and-so. And then, you know, in the bottom right-hand corner, it says up next, and you're fully expected to cut to a commercial. But right before they cut to commercial, someone in completely civilian clothes with a darker complexion, similar to Matt Hardy, attacked Edge, beat him up, started screaming at Lita, and then quickly ran out of the building being chased by security. And I'm not going to lie, I saw it was Matt Hardy right away. It was very obvious that it was Matt Hardy, but it was just like, well, Matt Hardy hasn't been on television. In real life, he doesn't work for WWE and hasn't in quite a few months at this point. And the telltale sign for me that at the time I thought, like, oh my God, it's real life, it's not in storyline, was that the commentators didn't talk. And for me, I always thought, and I've been more educated now, and bear in mind, I was only 11 years old at the time, I always thought, like, oh, if the commentators aren't talking, that's when it's real life stuff. So they come back from commercial break, Edge comes to the ring. Again, commentators make no reference to what happened. They don't mention who that could have been. And Edge goes on with his match. But as the match is going on, we quickly realize that whoever this guy is, isn't quite done with Edge.
Out and making Lita pay.
Well, that's right enough, Coach. I think she can't unlock the wall.
Hey, look out now, Lita. Look out, Lita. Oh,
this is all about winning. This is Paul Kane.
So, in the middle of a match between Kane and Edge, Snitsky first interferes, takes out Kane, they go fighting off into the crowd, and then Matt Hardy runs into the ring and continues his assault on Edge that he had just started backstage before the commercial break. And again, as soon as Matt Hardy entered the ring and started attacking Edge, Jim Ross and the commentary team went absolutely silent. And look, obviously, looking back in hindsight, this was just an incredible booking job by WWE to make it look extremely realistic. And this was at a time when kayfabe was still a thing. You know, the internet wasn't as big. Like, it was just starting, but it wasn't as big. Not every single wrestler had a Twitter account. I don't even know if Twitter existed. Facebook was still very new. They were still very true to their characters, even from a public perspective. It wasn't like nowadays that we all knew that, you know, Drew McIntyre and Roman Reigns are best friends behind the scenes. So you really thought that there was a possibility that this was real, at least from an 11-year-old perspective. Like, maybe if I was watching it at my age now that I'm 26, I would have realized, well, there's no way that Matt Hardy could have infiltrated a security team. But the way that they produce this segment, for lack of a better terms, of him running into the ring, the way he attacked Edge, like, he didn't run in and hit, like, a twist of fate and go up to the top rope and hit a leg drop. Like, goes in, just starts throwing fists. Security runs in right away, very, like, absolutely no comments from the commentary team. Then he runs out to ringside. He calls Edge by his real name, Adam, calls Lita. Well, you heard it. I won't repeat the name that he called her. And then he says, WWE could kiss my ass. And then he eventually gets arrested on screen. They put him on the ground and then they carry him out in handcuffs. I really thought that it was a real life event. And, you know, kudos to WWE that maybe they were just fooling me, an 11-year-old kid, and other guys in my age group, and all the adults, you know, kind of saw through it, which I'm sure most of them did. But even nowadays, if I was 11 watching the product nowadays, you all know, you know, it's completely a show. But this was like the tail end of a time in wrestling where you fully believed that it was possible that there were some real life events. And that was the best part of it, right? And we knew that there was a real life thing going on with Edge and Lita in the preceding months to this altercation on July 11th of 2005. You knew what happened in real life between these three. And it was just a question of whether or not WWE and Vince McMahon and creative could convince Edge and Matt Hardy to do an angle like this. So this happens, and you're not, at least again, from my perspective, I wasn't sure we were ever going to see anything come from this, because again, I thought it was a real life occurrence. But the following week on Monday Night Raw, Vince McMahon comes to the ring and addresses the situation.
Pat myself on the back again for is that I don't allow my ego, as huge as it is, I don't allow my ego to get in the way of making good business decisions. Because that's why we're here tonight. I've made good business decisions, and I've made them for WWE fans. I mean, let's face it, why else would I bring back superstar after superstar, bring them back after they've stabbed me in the back? Because it's good business. Why would I bring a son of a bitch like Eric Bischoff from WCW back as general manager of Raw? Unpopular as it may be, good business. Why would I take a brand that was dead and buried, ECW, bring it back, rejuvenate it, give it life? Because it's good business, that's why. So tonight I'm making another good business decision, or at least I think so. It's a business decision that nobody knows about, including Eric Bischoff. It's a decision involving an individual who was formerly a WWE superstar. He's been on the outside looking in. He's been wreaking havoc, ladies and gentlemen, in our arena, in our backstage area. He's been building fires all over the WWE. And you know me, when I see a fire, I just have to pour gasoline on it. I can't help myself. So without any further ado, allow me to introduce you to the man who was recently signed by me to come back to action. This man will see individual competition at SummerSlam against his opponent, Edge. Uh-oh. Ladies and gentlemen, I give you Matt Hardy.
Matt Hardy and Edge. Of course, Edge's not here tonight. He's an all
So there you have it. Matt Hardy gets professionally reinstated, or officially rather, reinstated by the chairman of the board, Vince McMahon. And if you heard, once Matt Hardy's music hit and Vince McMahon officially brought him back to WWE, Jerry the King Lawler says, finally, we can talk about him being here. And again, it was just such great booking and producing of this build and this program by WWE to make it feel very real. And that's what was so great about this program, is that it just felt so real. It felt relatable, because I'm sure, I hope not a lot of you, but I'm sure there are some of you out there who have been in some form of a love triangle at some point in your life. It's unfortunate, but it happens more often than you may think. And that's the best part about wrestling, right? Not love triangles. That's not the best part about wrestling, but the relatability factor, when you could live vicariously through somebody. And, you know, a guy like Matt Hardy, who had been done wrong by an ex-girlfriend and a scumbag guy who stole his girlfriend, getting to come back, seek revenge, get rewarded for it, and like Vince McMahon said, got to go one-on-one with Edge at SummerSlam, which was coming up just in a couple weeks at this point. It was just such a great story. And it actually gave Matt Hardy a chance to give his side of the story, his personal perspective, once he got in the ring.
Mr. McMahon giving a live mic to Matt Hardy. This should be most interesting.
It could be very dangerous.
Well, I guess I should thank Vince McMahon for officially bringing me back to Raw. But actually, Vince McMahon didn't bring me back to Raw. The people, each and every one of you, brought me back to Raw. And unlike Vince McMahon, I do thank all of you. And for any of you that may not know my story, I want to catch everyone up to speed. I was involved in a 6-year relationship with Amy Dumas, better known as Lita. And although Lita was married to Kane on TV, Amy Dumas came home every night to me. While I was out of action with a serious knee injury, I discovered that Amy was having an affair with Adam Copeland, better known as Edge, a guy who was supposedly one of my closest friends on this planet. Once this story broke and became public, my world turned upside down. You guys know the deal. And each and every one of you let Lita, you let Edge, you let the WWE know how you felt. And I'll never forget sitting at home on my couch watching Raw from Madison Square Garden. There were over 20,000 people and they were chanting, "We want Matt!" And you screwed Matt!
So there you have it, Matt Hardy completely pulling back the curtain on what was going on in real life for him and Lita and Edge during this time, and the build to how they got to this, both from a storyline and real life perspective. And, you know, I always thought it was very telling how he said, you know, on TV, she was married to Kane, but she always came home to me. And this was like one of the first times that you ever saw on WWE television them referencing that it was a story on TV, and, you know, talking about, like, you know, now this is real life. And obviously, although there was real life events, Matt Hardy coming back and, you know, them working, they weren't actually fist fighting. Like, all three of these people agreed to it, being Matt, Edge, and Lita. But it was still a very cool angle and approach that WWE took. And, you know, Vince McMahon said in the ring, it's best for business. Well, again, he was saying that on television, but you have to know that he saw that there was money to be made and that the fans would clearly eat it up. And that's why he went ahead and approached these people, these three, into going forward with this idea. And this led to their match at SummerSlam. And I got to say, what a letdown. It was just a very big letdown once these two got in the ring. And Edge actually won via knockout, which made no sense. Like, Matt Hardy got cut and he couldn't continue. It was like a technical knockout thing as he was bleeding too much. And it was just it was an instance where the story was so damn good and then they got in the ring and it just didn't mesh. And, you know, we've talked about it so many times on the WWE podcast. Matt has a ton of times. I'm in the same boat as him when it comes to this. That the story supersedes the in-ring competition. And this program is a telling sign of that. Because from an in-ring perspective, I don't think these guys did anything spectacular. And we wouldn't be talking about it if they had not had the story that they had 15 years later. Because I know that they had the classic ladder matches with the Dudleys and Christian and Jeff. But look, the story was so damn good that fast forward 15 and a half years, I'm sitting here doing a podcast talking about just how damn great the story was. So they have their match at SummerSlam where Edge wins by, I guess, a technical knockout because Matt Hardy was bleeding too much. And then it leads to a steel cage match at Unforgiven. And this one was really good. This match was incredible. And it went just about the way that you would have thought. Covered in blood was Edge. And they just kicked the crap out of each other. And it ends with Matt Hardy getting the victory off of a diving leg drop from the top of the cell. Getting the 1-2-3 on Edge. And getting the score count to 1-1 against one another. Following this steel cage match, which Matt Hardy got the big gory victory on Edge, and I say gory because there was just so much blood coming from Edge's forehead in this match, I really suggest you guys go watch it. It leads to a street fight shortly thereafter between the two on Monday Night Raw. And this ends in a no contest when Matt Hardy gives a side effect to Edge off of the stage into the electrical wires and the electrical, I guess, station that WWE had just on the side of the stage back in the day. And I miss these spots because it was so many times that WWE went to this where right off the side of the stage, if you went flying off of there, you were either going through a table or like a speaker and there would always be like fireworks that would come out. And it was a really good spot and ended up having this street fight end in a no contest because when the two landed and went through the tables, there's a bunch of electricity that shot out and it just ended in a no contest as neither of them could continue. And this leads us to the finale of their program of at Raw Homecoming, where they met in a ladder match for the Money in the Bank briefcase in which the loser would be forced to leave Monday Night Raw. And these two meeting in a ladder match was so poetic because they had made their careers off of the iconic ladder matches that they were involved in at WrestleMania 16, 17, and SummerSlam 2000. So when these two met on the Raw Homecoming at, I believe it was just early October at this point, we knew that one way or another, this story would be wrapped up.
Let Matt Hardy get back in the ring. That shows you the will for Matt Hardy to compete and to stay here on Monday Night Raw. Matt Hardy, Matt Hardy, to the bank, to the bank, to the bank. That was a 10-foot high to the bank. Are you kidding me? Can Matt Hardy capitalize? And just Lita's in shock. She can't believe her eyes. I can't either. Edge, like virtually motionless on the outside.
That's got to be it for Edge.
The loser leaves Raw immediately. The winner wins the Money in the Bank. Ladder match and that contract to meet the WWE Champion. The stakes couldn't be any higher.
Right now, there's nothing to stop Matt Hardy.
And when Matt stays here on Raw, you know he's going to make Lita's life miserable. He's got it all. Look at her. Lita, the kendo stick, time and again, out of her hamstring on Matt Hardy. And this is after he went through the table. Lita went sailing into the turnbuckle.
Well, Lita did everything she could, but now there's no Edge, there's no Lita. Matt Hardy looks like he's
took the ladder right off from under Matt, just like she did his wife. Oh, no, oh. Now look at Edge. Edge not come on. Look at this. Oh! Matt Hardy hung up on that top rope.
So close. Matt Hardy was so close.
Oh, my God, this is it. This could be it right here. Hardy's been tied up in the ropes.
And look at Lita holding on for dear life. She's going to make sure. Look at this.
I can't believe this.
Now all Matt Hardy can do is sit there and watch Edge climb the ladder and watch his career go to the drain.
What must be going through the tormented mind of Matt Hardy? All he can do is watch this. This is not fair.
It's not fair, but it is beautiful.
And Edge has won it. Edge has won it.
So just when it looked like Matt Hardy had the win in the bag after hitting the twist of fate off the ladder on Edge, Lita comes in, attacks him with a kendo stick, then moves the ladder. He falls off while hanging onto the briefcase, gets tied up in the ropes, and with Lita wrapping herself around his arm so he can't get untied, Edge climbs up the ladder and retains the briefcase and sending Matt Hardy off of Monday Night Raw and, for all intents and purposes, getting the victory on the program as a whole. And I think in a lot of ways, this program fell flat, at least for myself. I thought that they could have maybe stretched it on a little longer, maybe closed it at not a Monday Night Raw. I know it was a homecoming, so a special type of Raw, but maybe close it at a bigger name pay-per-view. But I think it was just a sign that these two guys were going in opposite directions. And it was that Matt Hardy was, you know, going back down to the lower middle card, and Edge was destined for superstardom in WWE and was just starting to completely catch fire as a main event heel. And that's exactly what happened, because look at the year following this. Edge cashed in, won the WWE Championship at New Year's Resolution, had a great match, a legendary match with Mick Foley at WrestleMania 22, and then the following summer had a great program with John Cena, which we have already covered here on WWE Rivalries. And then you look at Matt Hardy, and he went over to SmackDown, had a brief program with MVP over the United States Championship. And then, you know, I know he went over to the new ECW brand, had a run with the ECW World Championship. He reunited a bit with Jeff Hardy. They won the tag team titles. They had a brief program with M&M in early, or I believe it was late 2006, early 2007. And look, I'm not trying to trash Matt Hardy or diminish what, you know, he's done for the wrestling business. But at the end of the day, he is no more than a mid-card guy. And that's kind of on a good day. And I'm sorry to say that, but that's what Matt Hardy is. And this program was the peak of his career. And he never had and never did get back to the amount of relevancy that he was at during his program with Edge. And the fact of the matter is that Edge was on his way to becoming one of the most successful WWE superstars of the Ruthless Aggression era, and stayed that way up until his retirement and now his return in 2020. And again, it's not a slight on Matt Hardy, but he just never had that it factor. He never screamed the main event. And you know, if you listen to Chris Jericho's podcast when Matt Hardy first jumped to AEW, he kind of referenced that, how Vince McMahon never saw him as a main event guy. And talking specifically about the Hardy Boys, Jeff Hardy was always the guy. And that is true. And it often happens with tag teams that once they do split, one guy becomes a bona fide main eventer and the other guy kind of just wastes away in obscurity. Or maybe not in obscurity, but then just becomes a mid card guy. And we kind of saw it with Edge and Christian. You know, I think that Christian had a more successful singles run than Matt Hardy by quite a large margin, because Christian was a very prominent guy on Monday Night Raw in the upper mid card in the Ruthless Aggression era. But, you know, did Christian even sniff the success that Edge did? Not even close. So it happens. But I just think that unfortunately for Matt Hardy, even with the real life events going on and the crowd organically backing him during this program, They knew deep down who was the star in the making. They knew who they wanted to see in the WWE Championship picture. And Edge just outgrew Matt Hardy, both in this storyline and in real life with the fans. It was just time for Edge to go on to bigger and better things. And those bigger and better things became John Cena, The Undertaker, the world title, the WWE title, winning a Royal Rumble, you know, a legendary hardcore match with Mick Foley. Just all the things you could think of that were possible for Edge came to light in the succeeding couple of years following this program. And unfortunately for Matt Hardy, it was just never really meant to be from a main event perspective. And we even saw that when he returned in 2017 with Jeff. Once they finished up their initial run as the Hardy Boys and they won the Raw Tag Team Championships, when he split away and went ahead with the Delete character, it really crashed and burned. And I know you could blame that on booking or what have you, but at the same time, I don't think it's done too well in AEW either. And again, I'm not trying to, I don't know, rain on the parade of Matt Hardy or crap all over his career, but at the end of the day, he was just nothing more as a singles competitor, because obviously as a tag team with his brother Jeff, he made up one of the best tag teams of all time. But as a singles competitor, here was nothing more than honestly a lower mid-card guy, and on a very good day, a mid-card guy at best. So look, guys, I hope you enjoyed today's show. As always, you can get me on Twitter at ADeMarco25. If you have questions, feel free to get them to me, both via the voicemail that Matt has set up or on my Twitter, or you can email him at realwwpodcast@gmail.com. Again, hope you guys are safe. Happy Thanksgiving to all the American listeners out there. We up here in Canada had our Thanksgiving a month and a half ago. So I hope you guys are all doing well, and I'll talk to you next week.